through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
This hour of Tom, Jake, and Stacy is brought to you by Mercedes-Benz of Seattle. The professor, John Clayton, joining us now. John, how are you?
Doing well. How are you?
Good, good. You know, everything that could go right for Seattle this weekend pretty much did. Although Tom, earlier in our show, John, was a little bit worried about that because he was thinking the 49ers could be written off. Now, was it just a great performance by them for an otherwise banged up team? Is this a resurgence? I mean, what did you make specifically of that Rams 49ers game?
You can see that as good as we thought the Rams were with their start, there's, again, schedule means everything. And so what happens now is that they had four games against the NFC East, which is 2-14-1 against non-division games, worst in NFL history. And so they go 4-0 in the NFC East game. So you're thinking 4-1. Top eight defense, man, they're on a course. And then, of course, we look at the Buffalo game. As great as it was with the comeback that they had down 28-3, they're down 28-3. So that's not good. And then they go to, and we're just flat against the 49ers. And so really, I think what you're looking at, because again, the 49ers are still in trouble even with this victory. They're 3-3. They have six more games against good teams and very well could be out of it if they go 2-4 in those games. Because again, the way the stakes are higher in the NFC because you have so many bad teams feeding to NFC teams to get wins. And so, I think what you're looking at is now the gap is still there, which is new between Seattle, the Rams, the 49ers, and we'll see about the Cardinals.
Now, looking around the rest of the NFC before we bounce back to Seattle, you had Tampa Bay that beat the Green Bay Packers. Rob Gronkowski with his first touchdown since 2018. Awesome news for him. Is this a team that's a legit contender Seattle needs to be looking out for? I'm talking about Tampa Bay.
Oh, yeah, they are. No question. Because when you look at it, and they've got one of the easier closing schedules in football, you know, that's a team now that's looking to maybe win 12 games. You know, I know that they've got a couple losses already, but no, I think you can see things coming together. I mean, you got Tom Brady, but you also got one of the more stifling defenses in the National Football League. You know, Todd Bowles has put himself on course to maybe get a head coaching job. He's a defensive coordinator, and of course, had been the head coach of the New York Jets. But the fact that last year he established the best run defense in football. This year, as they continued since midseason, they've got one of the more stifling blitzing defenses in football. And you combine that with the top quarterback, that's a dangerous team. And right now, with their schedule being a little bit easier than the New Orleans Saints, they now look to be the favorites in that division. And I know that you look at analytical sites, and they pretty much, when they run the simulations, they come out with 12 wins. Now, maybe it's going to be 11, maybe it's going to be 10, but right now they're a legitimate contender.
John, what did you make of the Green Bay Packers' performance? I got to tell you, you know, you see sometimes Aaron Rodgers when he's getting a bunch of pressure and his face just looks like he had, you know, some sort of horseradish for the first time. I don't know. It just it's one of those things that I look at and think, can Green Bay be a legit playoff contender if they're facing a legitimate pass rush?
Well, they're a legit playoff contender mainly because they've got Aaron Rodgers. But again, it's like, are they as good as that 13-win team? And this brought them down to earth, although I thought it was kind of unusual that Aaron Rodgers came out after the game and says, you know, this 28-point loss was good for us because, you know, it puts things in perspective. It's like, no loss is good, and particularly one that is that bad. But I think it does show you, as great as it has been in the first four games on their offensive line, you know, they do have issues. And then, of course, they don't know about David Bakhtiari. He got hurt. We'll see how bad that's going to be. And I think that, you know, they're not good stopping the run. That's been a problem all year. And again, like a lot of teams, they give up yards and give up points on defense. So that's got to be concerning. But still, it doesn't take them out of the fact that, you know, it's Green Bay and an average Chicago team battling for that division.
John, I was on earlier asking you questions on the morning show, and rattled off some interesting stats. Can you tell the people what has been your latest project that you've been working on in those databases?
Yeah, in fact, one of the things I was working on is that it's a league of have and have nots. And what I mean by the haves, you got the good teams, Seattle being one of the good teams, Green Bay being one of the good teams. And so now you have 12 teams league-wide, and I'm excluding the 2-3 Patriots, you know, and I'm excluding the 2-3 Dallas Cowboys, who you might put in as a 13th team. But if you look at the 12 teams, you know, what their record are in the league is 13-54-2. You've got 10 teams right now that have won one or fewer games, two more than last year. And there's only been four times this year that one of these bad boys have-nots have gone up and beating a have or a 500 team. And that, of course, you know, you've got Miami beating a 3-3 San Francisco team. You know, you've got Detroit beating Arizona. And so there have been very few times we've had these have-nots win. And what that's going to do, like you see more so in the case of Seattle, it inflates the value of what you're going to have for wins. Like, for example, what I did is I took five teams and I looked at it and said, okay, who's going to benefit the most? You know, Seattle, obviously, they're 5-0 on non-division games, and the possibility with only one that has a winning record, that's going to be Buffalo. They can go 9-1 in the division games. They could go 10-0. I gave Dallas, even though they're going to end up projecting out to be a 6-win team to win the division, they get the benefit of the five remaining games in the NFC East. I gave Tampa some nods because their schedule is reasonably easy. And in the AFC, I give Cleveland and the Raiders the chance both to be wild cards because their closing schedules are easy because of the have-nots.
What? I'm not quite sure what that proves, though. I mean, certain teams are going to have easy schedules. Are you saying because there's a certain number of teams that are that much worse, that somehow has an effect on the league? Like, I'm not quite sure what you're getting at.
No, it always does. I mean, schedule is everything. And as Dick Vermeil once taught me and others, and everybody listen, you can go 3-3 against winning teams and go to the Super Bowl. You just make sure you got to go 10-0 against the losing teams. And that's what you see in this case in so many teams around the league. If you get so few winning teams out there to face, then you have a chance to roll off and win the winnable games. Now, certainly you can lose to a bad team and you pay a price for it, but what that does, and it does this every year, and this year is more pronounced than any year I can remember with so many bad teams. I mean, 10 teams right now, we're 6 weeks into the season and heading into the seventh, and they got 1 or 0 wins. And so, you know, those teams are bad. And, of course, you know, they'll get to get a few extra wins. Like Miami, for example, they're getting some wins against, you know, average or below average teams, some have-nots. And so they're at 3-3, but they're not a very good team. And so if you can watch from the Seahawks schedule, if you can take advantage of it, you know, you can win more. Go back to that, because would you say that the Bears are a great team in the last few years? They had a 12-win season a couple years ago with terrible quarterbacking, and they only had a 4-1 record against winning teams. So they had to go 8-3 against losing teams to get the 12 wins. And next year they got back to reality because their schedule got tougher.
We just did an exercise a second ago. Which Seahawk do you think will or would you want to improve after the bye week here? Who would you select for that?
I'd say, you know, Quentin Dunbar, because they just need to tighten things up in the secondary. And obviously Trey Flowers has struggled mightily in the times he's been in there filling in for Dunbar. But they need Dunbar to kind of get in there. Naturally, they get Jamal Adams back. You know, Quandre Diggs has played solid. The guy that bounced back in the last couple games has been Shaquille Griffin. But I say it's got to be Quentin Dunbar, because you know they're good at linebacker. They're still improving on the pass rush, but they need to tighten things down in the secondary and stop allowing those big third down plays, stop allowing the big chunk plays.
John, do you think that secondarily, like a point to that, do you expect that to happen for this secondary? Because when we were having the conversation in preseason, it was like, hey, this could be a top five secondary. Mm-hmm. Defensive back, like, room looks solid. Is it a product of them not being healthy at the same time? I mean, what's been the biggest issue? Is it scheme? When you watch, what's going on here?
Well, what's going on is that really, and this is where the schedule plays, even though when you're talking about the records, this doesn't apply. But, you know, when you go up in a passing league, when you get the lead and you're holding teams to like 160, 170 yards in the first half, and you have a double-digit lead, you're giving up and leaking yardage. Troy Aikman even said this on the broadcast yesterday, where he said that, you know, at this stage, the way this season is going, don't read as much as you normally do into yards allowed. And the reason for that is that, like, for example, the Seahawks faced two Hall of Fame quarterbacks, and well, not Hall of Fame quarterbacks, but MVPs, and Cam Newton and Matt Ryan. And you saw all the yards Matt Ryan's been putting up, and he's got one win. Then you got Kirk Cousins, who he's hot or cold. He was a little bit hotter in the Seahawks game. And then, you know, Fitzpatrick, he's a backup. And then you got Dak Prescott before he was injured, dominating in yards allowed, yards gained. And so you look at that, and it kind of distorts things, but things should get better. Now, again, it's going to be tough for these next five games because you got four division games and Josh Allen in Buffalo, but then after that, the numbers will start coming down, but they need the numbers to start coming down in these next five games.
John, you look at the Seahawks right now, and these next 5 weeks are obviously going to be critical. We're going to learn a lot about this group because you talk about the haves and the have-nots and the fact that there are more bad teams in the NFL than we've ever seen before. What are we going to see, or what is going to be proven by this group through this 5 weeks as they play good, you know, strength of schedule?
Mm-hmm. Well, really what it's going to come down to in the next five games, believe it or not, is going to be doing well in stopping the run, maybe more so than the pass. And the reason I say that is that, Arizona, occasionally likes to run the football, and they've got a running quarterback. And so they've got to be, watching there, because if you watch Kyler Murray, he has good weeks and bad weeks. I mean, a couple weeks ago, he only threw for like 137 or 140 yards. And so then you've got the two of the best running schemes in football with pre-snap motion and everything else coming with the Rams and the two games against them, of course, one in the next five. And then, you got San Francisco, and you saw how well they can do running the football, even though you never know who can be at running back for them. You know, their formula is they want 30 running plays, and they want to run them well and get some good yards. And so this is where Jamal Adams comes in even more valuable than he was before he got the groin injury, because he's that positionalist player that could be in a position, whether it's strong safety or wherever you line him up, to go chase down a running back or a quarterback trying to do RPOs and things of that nature, and also get to the quarterback when necessary. And so this is where his value came in. Remember, Arizona realized that because they made Isaiah Simmons the eighth pick in the draft, because he was that type of positionless player. But the problem is he's not playing the position. He only had like 18 snaps last week. We'll see how much he does tonight. So that's kind of where the game has evolved. And that's why, even though they gave up a lot to get him, Jamal Adams, in these division games, and right now an NFC West that has, 500 teams or better, this is where it really sorts out. And if you can go 4-2 in the division, you're golden with that schedule.
It's a very good point, John. Just one more thing before we let you go here is can the NFL do us a favor here in Seattle and figure out, come up with a ruling or some sort of statement in terms of Josh Gordon? You see David Irving being reinstated to the Dallas Cowboys, and he's obviously had a checkered past. He's reinstated. It's just curious. I'm just curious why they even haven't made a statement about what they're doing, what they're overseeing with Josh Gordon. It seems like it's really been, crickets from the NFL league office.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that's bad, because I think at this stage, you need to make sure that you know what's going on. And of course, it's gone on too long. I mean, they were so in doing it. I mean, Randy Gregory is going to be on the field this week, and he's had the suspension, and he had to, apply for reinstatement and get the word back. We've got David Irvin, who doesn't have a team right now, although he did fly to Las Vegas to visit the Raiders, to not get the word out on Josh Gordon, I just think is wrong. What we can do now, again, technically, the league can't even tell the team what's going on. I guess you can get it leaked back and forth, but they need to get the word out, because, I mean, he's missing the entire season, and he shouldn't.
Is there any argument to keep Adam Gase for the entire year for the Jets?
The only reason is if you want Trevor Lawrence. That would be the
Maybe
only
I
reason.
Do.
I mean, because again, it's like keep Gase for Trevor, I guess, might be the chant in New York.
That's too long.
Yeah, but I don't think I've ever seen as bad of a coach. Well, I hate to say it, I did see it once. maybe last year in Cleveland. But the even worst job I saw was a former Jet coach, Rich Kotite, who I thought was one of the worst coaches in NFL history. And again, I like Adam. His father-in-law is a real good contact of mine, Joe Vitt. But I don't think – I mean, look how bad the situation is. He puts players in games and gets them injured and puts them back in games and get them injured. Then, he's now feuding with his defensive coordinator.
Oh, yeah.
They're ranked 32nd on offense, and they can't do anything.
I mean, it might be easy to feud with Greg Williams, though. Do you think – okay, if hear me out, John.
Yeah.
I'll make this the last question because we have to let you go. If the Jets are winless through week 12 –
mm-hmm.
How likely is it they trade Sam Darnold? Because then they have a pretty good shot at Trevor Lawrence.
Well, what is it? Because the trading deadline is November 3rd. So what are we talking about? Three more
that's
weeks.
Pretty close. Yeah,
so it's like if they can't do it in the next 3 weeks. And I know that we had Bill Barnwell on from ESPN.com. And he had, although I don't agree with this, and I know that Jake won't agree with this, that he would be traded to the Indianapolis Colts. Which I can't see, but he very well could get traded because right now they got $15 million tied up in Jacoby Brissett, $25 million in Phillip Rivers, and they got Jacob Eason as the quarterback in development. To put that salary and all that, I just can't see that happening. But, he could be traded, and if he is, he needs to celebrate.
He is the Professor John Clayton. Ended with some fire. John, thanks so much for joining us.
Okay, thanks.
Let's get to Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory.
With Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
You live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it.
What formula do Pete Carroll and Ken Norton need to put together for the Seahawks defense to improve?
Well, it's a simple yet complicated formula. The Pete Carroll and Ken Norton Jr. need to decide how much they are going to bring Jamal Adams in pressure packages and playing their base defense. So it's part of trying to figure out how often they need to do that and still maintain the ability to limit big plays. The first 3 weeks of the season, they brought Jamal Adams and brought him often. And obviously, you still want to use him because he is a tremendous weapon. He is very, very good at rushing the quarterback. But when you consistently do it and you're not able to get to the quarterback, you leave yourself vulnerable to big plays down the field, and that's what they got themselves caught up in. So you wonder, over the last 2 weeks, they were able to play a better style of defense that allowed them to limit those big plays. Do they lean more to what they've done over the last 2 weeks, or do they go back to the first 3 weeks of the season when Jamal Adams was in the lineup, or do they try and find that mix? To me, I think it's more going to be situational based, third downs, critical moments of a game where you're going to see Jamal Adams, be brought to brush the quarterback. I don't think you're going to see him be brought in pressure as often as he was the first 3 weeks of the season.
Second down. 6 weeks into the NFL season, which teams are standing out to you, Jake?
The teams that are really standing out to me, I look at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, what they were able to do. It was really impressive against the Green Bay Packers. I think that they have an opportunity to really be a complete team from top to bottom if they can continue to get into a rhythm. So they are one for me. The Green Bay Packers, I believe, are still going to be someone to deal with and will be in the playoff hunt. No question about that. And then obviously the NFC West is those three teams, if you talk about from a Seahawks perspective, they are always going to be tough outs. But you go to the AFC, and a team that has really surprised me and I've really, really been impressed with them is the Pittsburgh Steelers. They are playing tremendous football. They are getting to the quarterback, forcing turnovers. And Big Ben, at this stage of his career, is not a quarterback that you need to rely on him solely to help you win ball games. But if they can play great defense and just have Big Ben make one or two big plays throughout the given game, he's still good enough to get that done. And I think that they have a nice little formula and philosophy going on in Pittsburgh. Curious to see how it develops through the rest of the season.
Their drafting is just always so consistent. They're always stocked with some level of talent. I'm envious. Third down. Stacey, is there a conversation you're getting tired of when it comes to this defense? Are you weary?
Wary. Many conversations I'm getting tired of in general, but I think the narrative, and I know Danny O'Neill hates that word, I think the narrative I'm getting tired of is the idea that defenses are having slow starts, and so therefore it's an excuse for poor defensive performances. There is some truth to the idea that passing offenses, offenses in general also, are just starting out at such a rapid pace this year. So, for instance, in 2019, you had two teams, this is by the end of 17 weeks, but you had two teams that were allowing an average of 400-plus yards from opposing offenses per game. This year, it's only through 6 weeks, but this year you have seven teams allowing 400 or more yards per game from opposing offenses. So are defenses through 6 weeks performing more poorly than they were last year? Yeah. Are offenses also not being called often for offensive holding and, you know, kind of high-flying, high-octane offenses? For sure. But there are also defenses that are still holding it down, still doing a great job. The Pittsburgh Steelers, who Jake just mentioned in his last answer, holding opponents to 285.2 yards per game. Compare that to the Seattle Seahawks, allowing 471.2 yards per game from opposing offenses. That has actually gotten better since week three, if you can believe it. So I think that it is a truth, yes. It is not an excuse, and I am sure that the Seattle Seahawks are looking at it that way as well.
Support them. Each has their own leadership style. Russell Wilson, Tom Brady, and Aaron Rodgers. What are the differences?
Well, you look at the differences, and I think it's in the moments of adversity when things are going wrong, and particularly their play during a course of a game. And this was something that, you know, Paul Gallant was asking me earlier on the morning show, and you know, it was really interesting to walk through all three of those different personalities, because you see Russell Wilson, who is, you know, he's positive, but he's not overly positive. He's more tries to stay in that neutral, you know, frame of mind, and tries to keep guys in it when things are going wrong. You know, hey, I'm going to need you the next time, the next rep. Hey, you know, focus on what's going to happen on the next play. Tom Brady, he will yell at guys. I mean, he will full on yell at guys. He'll get frustrated with himself, but it comes from a place of motivation. I think Tom Brady builds that up with his teammates of, hey, it's, you know, Tom, if you're not doing your job, Stacey, if you're not doing your job, I'm going to say, hey, we need to pick it up, right? And I'm going to say that with an impassioned manner, and you know where it's coming from, what, you know, what type of place it's coming from as I'm saying those words to you. And I'm holding myself accountable in Tom Brady's case. Aaron Rodgers' leadership style, I very much view him as the guy who looks at everyone else around him as his kids. Like, he's the dad, he's the grandpa, whatever. Like, I've got all this experience. I've, you know, done a lot of great things in my life, and I'm going to, you know, basically kind of, you know, shame everybody into performing better. I'm going to shake my head. I'm going to kind of sulk. I'm going to be disappointed, you know, those types of things. And I think that those three leadership styles are very unique and very, very different from each other, yet have been successful for whatever reason. So, but if you're, I would be curious, you guys, you know, if you had to pick, you know, would you respond better to the Russell Wilson, Tom Brady, or Aaron Rodgers? Because everybody has their own different personalities.
I think it's got to be Russell Wilson for me. Tom?
Whoever is able to most effectively make me better. I think sometimes giving me adverse circumstances makes me better, so it could be any of them. I don't need somebody to like play down to me though and patronize me and tell me everything's always great when it isn't.
Yeah, which I think Tom Brady's one of those guys, you know. Like, I think he's that mix between being fiery and yelling at you to tell you to pick it up, and I think Russell Wilson, yeah, I don't think he lies to anybody, but I also think that he's one of those guys that is going to focus more on the positive than the negative.
And I mean, Tom Brady's always a good guy. Like, he'll split, you know, a sugar-free Jell-O with you or a strawberry, something fun like that. if you missed the show, you can always listen to it via the 710 Sports app, powered by Dubin Law Group. Seattle got some help this weekend. We learned plenty from a game against the Green Bay Packers and Tampa Bay Buccaneers. We'll get to that next in the halftime show.
It's time for the Halftime Show.
The half is not over. There's 3 seconds on the clock.
Revisiting the biggest stories of today at the midpoint of the show.
The Halftime Show. It's not easy.
Now, here's Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
We kicked off the show by talking about Week 6 in the NFL. The Seahawks didn't play, but they sure benefited from some big losses by other NFC teams. Chief among those were a loss, the LA Rams to the 49ers, a bit of an upset there for the Rams. You also had the Tampa Bay Buccaneers beating the Green Bay Packers, Aaron Rodgers throwing two interceptions, something Russell Wilson hasn't done since 2018. No brag, no brag. Jake, when you look at that performance by Aaron Rodgers specifically, did anything about it make you less nervous for Green Bay? Because I got to be honest, while it was satisfying to see, Green Bay still, to me, is the top threat to Seattle. Thankfully, they don't play each other in the regular season.
Yeah, unless the Seahawks all of a sudden turn things around and they become a force in terms of getting after the quarterback.
You never know.
The formula to really disrupt Aaron Rodgers, the Seahawks unfortunately do not have that. But it does give me a sense of encouragement to know that this offense and the way that the Seahawks are playing certainly can keep up with Green Bay. So I think that that is one that I turn to and look at and think positively at that front. But, you know, one of the things that I did really enjoy watching was here in cut number one, Curtis, Ndamukong Suh not only sacking Aaron Rodgers, but letting him hear about it afterwards.
21 seconds left, no timeouts. And now sacked again as he's shoved down by Ndamukong Suh. And he gets up screaming at Rodgers.
What I did walk away from is thinking that, man, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, they might have hit their stride and they might have quickly jumped to one of the teams that I fear in the NFC. And it only reiterates to my in my mind the importance for the Seahawks to really go and try and grab that number one seed, because I think it's going to be as difficult as ever with the additional game that they have added into the playoffs.
Tom, Jared Goff let you down.
Los Angeles Rams, get it?
Oh, I get it. I don't mind it, Tom.
See, I can do puns too, sort of. Ay, ay, ay. Look, I love Goff, but the kid makes some of the worst throws I've ever seen. His wide receivers, particularly Cooper Kupp, didn't make it any easier on him. I mean, you don't see those kinds of throws out of Russell. You know, routinely skipping on the ground a yard in front of the receivers. He just doesn't do that. I think that Goff's ceiling is still higher than a guy like Garoppolo. I think Garoppolo is very much an average quarterback, yet effective. But, I mean, I think, you know, I forget what point you were making last segment, Stacey.
Probably a good one.
It had to do with the fact that the Rams, they had a bad first half, but their defense was good enough in the second half to actually go out and win that game had Goff played a little better, had his receivers played a little better. Rams had a couple of sustained drives. Had Kupp caught that touchdown, which actually was a good throw, early in the fourth quarter, that could have changed the game around. So they had a shot there. But I guess the point is, and this is where I disagree with Clayton a little bit on the haves and the have-nots. We don't really know until about this point, maybe even a little bit later in this season, who the good teams are. I wrote off San Francisco last week. That was a mistake. They could still turn out, maybe not record-wise, but to be one of the good teams in the league. Like, they could end up 10-6, but be a lot more dangerous than your average 10-6 team is, just because of all the injuries they had. So, you know, I don't know that looking at the schedule early in the season determines much of anything. I think that this division is still very much up for grabs. But do I still have faith that Seattle is one of those teams? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, watching those two teams go at it, I think really in my mind reiterated the thought that there is an easy formula that works out in the Seahawks' favor. Mm. This year they have changed their offensive philosophy to not just try and win the game in the fourth quarter and keep things close and then unleash Russell Wilson to win in a two-minute drive. They have been very aggressive early and often in these games. And if you have teams that are struggling or young teams that are trying to find themselves, and I would put all three of those teams in there for various reasons. The Rams, young team, different components, trying to make it all come together. The 49ers have struggled with injuries. The Arizona Cardinals and young overall organization, all three of those teams, if you get ahead in early commanding leads, that's going to give yourself the best chance to win these games. If you allow these organizations to believe and to start feeling themselves a little bit, like San Francisco was early on, their defense started to really get engaged and bring energy, that's when these games really become difficult. And at that point, it's really anybody's ball game. So I think Seattle's aggressive approach early on is going to be their best strategy to you know, win the division.
All right, a quick round of this. We talked about in our next story our defensive players. I mean, it was supposed to be the Seahawks that we wanted to take a big step forward after the bye. It ended up being three defensive players that we chose. There were some honorary mentions we didn't get to. Someone texted in Shaquille Griffin. They'd love to see him step up even more after the bye week. I went with the defensive line. I went Jaron Reed. I think that the best thing he can do is what he already did, which is round everyone up and just have a conversation about getting better. Jake, you also went defensive line with your choice. Who'd you pick?
Yeah, and one of the other reasons why that's so important, Stacey, is you mentioned Jaron Reed. Him accepting accountability for his own play and demanding greatness from others oftentimes brings out the best in great players. And when you do that, you have other guys like Benson Mayoa, who I picked as a guy who needs to step up. I think Benson Mayoa has played really good football the first 5 weeks of the season, but in order for this team to continue to keep winning and to be successful in this next five-game stretch, Benson Mayoa needs to do even more, which is going to be a really tough task since it seems like he is the only edge player that is able to get a consistent pass rush and affect the quarterback. But Benson Mayoa is going to need him to come up big these next 5 weeks.
Yeah, I said Jamal Adams. I hold him to a higher standard. Traded those first-round draft picks for him because he affects everything.
Yeah.
He affects – when he's playing his best, he affects everything on the field. He always has to be accounted for because you never really know what he's going to do. Coverage, blitzing, just making tackles, being there on the ball or away from it. I think without him, it just frees up offenses to be more creative, and with him, it not only limits offenses, but it makes other players around him better, both when he's on the field with them and when he's off it. I mean, just knowing that he's there is going to make everybody more comfortable to focus solely on their responsibilities and not the things that Adams would normally be affecting.
All right, a radio station in Tennessee got one of the best sports fan calls I've ever heard. You're going to want to hear this. Don't go anywhere. That's next on Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
This is The Timeline
with Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
It's The Timeline on Tom, Jake, and Stacey, reading you the top stories you're going to see on your own timelines. We got some funny ones today, you guys. Jake would like to file a complaint, but before we get to that, I got to talk about this call. I don't know if it's the SEC. I don't know if it's just college football in the South in general. I don't know what it is, but they have the weirdest, the strangest, the funniest radio calls. This one from a Vols fan. So after Tennessee's 34-7 loss at home to Kentucky, this guy called into the Tony Basilio show and had this to say.
What chance?
I messed up, threw a beer bottle through my window, and my wife left me.
You really did throw a beer bottle through your window?
Yeah, and I don't even drink. I had two beers. I wasn't even drunk. I can't stand to watch this team anymore. I can't do it. No, and I apologized to her and told her, honey, Tennessee football done this. I didn't do it.
I love this girl so much. It's not the Auburn Trees guy. It's not that. But what this is it's a pure, short, there's some good one-liners from this, right? It's just, I ain't
Absolutely.
Done that. Tennessee football did that. And then
yeah,
just,
they made me do it.
I wasn't even
drunk. I just so dang mad.
Jake, your southern accent's too good. I'm caught off guard here.
Well, I guess I lived in the SEC country for quite some time. No, I'm just kidding. But look, SEC fans, let's just be honest, they are way different than any other fan base in the entire country across any other sport. I mean, they are a unique breed. You have this call, you have the Lee Harvey Oswald call, a fan upset that they put a Scam Newton jersey on the Bear Bryant statue in Oswald's own words. But, yeah, this is a poor guy. I mean, I hope that things work out between him and his wife. But I can't imagine that this is the first time that he's maybe broken a window or two watching his Tennessee Vols.
Yeah, it definitely makes them superior sports fans to us. But, I mean, overall, it does suggest a serious lack of priority.
I don't know what you mean, Tom.
If they're smashing, I mean, think about it. They're a home. Your property is an extension of you, and you throw beer bottles through a window.
Yeah, but Tennessee did that to you, metaphorically.
No, the thing is, that's totally untrue. That's a distortion of fact.
I'm already broken if I'm a Tennessee fan.
Okay. There's a lot of SEC fans.
We can go down that road if you want. Yep.
That are distorted.
I love that call. Can we hear it one more time, Curtis? Just one more time.
Which is?
I messed up, threw a beer bottle through my window, and my wife left me.
You really did throw a beer bottle through your window?
Yeah, and I don't even drink. I had two beers. I wasn't even drunk. I can't stand to watch this team anymore. I can't do it. No, and I apologized to her and told her, honey, Tennessee football done this. I didn't do it.
My favorite line. My favorite part of this is, I can't do it. No. I'm going to start saying that about everything. I can't do it. No. All right. Jake Heaps, normally a very low-key, very calm, I got to say, just not a really uptight dude, got pretty fired up, you guys. And honestly, I can kind of understand why. So Jake Heaps, understandably, huge Key and Peele fan, I can assume, based on this. There's a classic sketch, cut number 7. I know you've heard it, but we're going to go ahead and play it right here. It's the McCrinkleberry.
That's a completed pass to a very wide-open Hingle McCrinkleberry, the rookie out of Penn State.
Nice grab by McCrinkleberry. You think he's happy?
Oh, boy, he is loving it down there.
Oh, we got something of a shooting gallery
going
on.
Oh, yeah, look at that. Boy, that is something. And, wait, we got a flag there.
He got
is that for excessive
for...
celebration?
Yeah.
Well, see, and I'm not sure about that call.
I don't know, Bill. That was 3 pumps, and the rule book says you cannot have more than 2.
Oh, my gosh.
Jake, you saw a level of disrespect this weekend. You want to elaborate on that?
Yeah, I did see a level of disrespect because, look, Aaron Rodgers did the celebration, and everyone on Twitter and social media was freaking out. Oh, my gosh, Aaron Rodgers, you know, this was the greatest thing ever. I firmly disagree. If you appreciate, truly appreciate Hingle McCringleberry, okay, this was a disgrace. This was a disgrace to that touchdown celebration. And by the way, Aaron Rodgers was not the first one to do this. Lance Moore of the New Orleans Saints did this back in 2013, and he had way more dedication to the celebration than Aaron Rodgers did. He barely even committed to it. So for anybody that's out there freaking out and congratulating Aaron Rodgers for that celebration, shame on you, because although homage to Hingle McCringleberry, the execution was very poor, in my opinion.
Tom, if you were to think of a question that would just leave you baffled, would it be someone saying, like, do you like the band Fish? I mean, what would the question be where you were like, I don't even know how to answer this. I'm so baffled.
That would leave me baffled?
Leave you speechless, like almost offended, just because you're like, what an obvious answer.
Oh God, if I give my honest answer, it'll probably offend some people, so I won't do that. I don't know. You'd have to give me a few minutes.
Okay. Well, Russell Wilson had one of those moments. He was on the Bill Simmons podcast, and Bill Simmons essentially asked him, not like, how often do you work out, but basically, how much time, how many days, a week, a month, a year do you spend staying in shape for football? This is what Russ had to say.
How many days? It's more so how many days I don't. I said I do 365.
Yeah.
365. The only time I don't, I probably do 363. You know, really, really the reality is Christmas. Depending on the circumstances, and usually I do because we usually have a game around then, and Thanksgiving. So it depends. I'm in between 363 and 365 amount of work that we do every day, something around the body working. And because I'm trying to play till I'm 45 at least, you know. And so
yeah.
For me, my mentality is that I'm going to leave it all on the field and do everything I can to take care of myself. And I think that's such a critical thing because if I feel good, I'm going to play good. And I think, you know, and that's why I've been able to be out in the field every time.
Jake, I want you to be very honest when I ask you this question. Has there been a day where you were training with Russ in the offseason and he was like, Jake, Hear me out. I know we have plans to train, but how do you feel about just like going to the lake? How do you feel about just like grabbing a bite to eat? Like, let's just scrap this. You know what I mean? Like, I'm tired. I got kids now. Like, let's just call it a day. I want to just be honest.
Okay.
When does Rogue Russ show up at practice?
I'll be honest. Yeah. Rogue Russ doesn't become Rogue Russ on the field by taking days off in the offseason. Okay. Rogue Russ is earned in that situation, Stacey. The funny thing is, it's like he is just absolutely baffled. What do you mean? What do you mean? How many days do I work? Like, when do I not work is the better question. I just kind of love that response from Russell. But it's truly, you know, the word I kept using this offseason to describe Russell has been obsessive, right? He has truly been obsessive his entire career. And one of the things that he's done is make sure that he is surrounding himself with people that are going to continue to stay on him, but also have a diligent schedule in place. And even when he goes on vacation, unlike me who goes on vacation for 4 days and I'm living it up, eating whatever I want, hanging out, Russell Wilson goes on vacation and he brings his entire body team. Yeah, I said it, body team. His personal trainer, massage therapist, physical therapist, the whole works is traveling with him wherever he goes in the offseason so that he doesn't miss any days. I mean, that's an insane level of dedication.
Tom, do you have a body
team?
Does he work?
I don't have a body team.
I don't
know. I mean, I wish I had one, but does Russell work out on game day too?
Yes. Yes, he does. He typically does like a
not
pool.
Even
he typically
for game day?
No, usually it's to get his body ready to go, and it's typically like a pool workout in the
Come
early morning
on.
And getting himself ready to go. Yeah, I mean, there's a routine set in place.
I just want a flaw. You know what? I want a flaw. I'm so tired of this. Like, I want Russell Wilson to be like, yeah, I hate ice cream. I hate all good movies. Like, I just don't like comedy.
I wonder if there comes a point. Like, the one thing I try to avoid in my life is ruts. Like, getting in ruts. Because, you know, you do, like, too much of one thing. I'm only listening to sports talk radio, or I'm only doing this, or only eating that. You know, not changing up a workout routine. I wonder if Russell Wilson, in his life, may dedicate so much attention to football to the point where, like, he becomes so good that he can't actually get better. You know what I mean? Like, he's outworked the potential of what his physical being will allow him to do.
And then he just ascends.
Yeah, he leaves his body.
He's transfigured with Russell, but
I mean,
that's the reason
why. Does
he
know how to drive a car?
Like, what if
yes, he does.
So much of his brain is dedicated to football that he's like, I don't know. I mean, like, how do you boil water? You know, like, just too much of your brain is dedicated to one thing. You're too good at it.
You know, I don't know. I don't know if he knows how to cook. He hasn't cooked in quite some time because he has a chef, you know. So I don't know if he knows how to do that. I mean, that would be one challenge that
maybe byproduct of being too rich.
Yeah, that's that too. I mean, that's an entirely different conversation.
All right. I want you guys to join this conversation next. So text in 710-710. That's the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. We're going to talk about what caught our eye from week 6. The three biggest things for each of us that stood out. I'm going to get started with Derrick Henry right away, but we got some good ones. That's coming up next on Tom, Jake, and Stacey.